Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Oh, my pleasure. Good to be with you again, Jim.
Has the forest fire smoke moved in on Calgary yet?
No, it's pretty clear skies. Up in Edmonton, where I've got family, they're saying that it is already impacting the area, but not as bad as we've had prior summers. And we just had a little bit of rain in the last few days, so they're saying that that's helped a little bit to control the fires. But people in the Fort Mac area, some of the suburbs have had to leave the area because the fires were getting close to their home. So it's still very early in fire season. We're going to have cooler and wet weather this week. So hopefully, we get enough rain that the firefighters can get ahead of it.
And I believe Alberta is the only jurisdiction in Canada that has firefighting equipment aircraft that can fly at night.
That I don't know, but the fires are so important. Or in terms of damage to, local communities up north there, First Nations communities. Of course, you got the oil patch up there. So there's a lot of economic impact if the fires are not controlled very quickly. And the government has done the right thing of making sure we're ready. And of course, with drier and drier climates, they've got no choice.
Now, what kind of an impact will it have on the oil markets if they have to evacuate Fort McMurray?
Well, the key is, will they have to shut in the production up there, the SAGD, the thermal oil, all of that oil sands, all of that can be shut in if the fires get as bad as they have been in the past. If that's the case, remember, Canada produces almost 6 million barrels a day of crude oil, of which over 3 million comes from that Fort Mac area.
Mm. What kind of an impact did it have the last time they had to pull out because of the raging flames?
Well, it was impact, of course, for communities that were able to take in people who effectively were refugees because of leaving their homes behind. The insurance industry, of course, had to, big tag for rebuilding the community and putting in fire breaks now more than they did before. The oil sands companies all had to spend a ton of money rebuilding. It was pretty nasty. Like remember the floods we had in Calgary? Many insurance companies, were not good citizens and weren't there quickly to pay and weren't there to help rebuild. Some of the most noted names in Canada, which you think of would be good, I'm not going to point out names, were terrible. And yet some names that you didn't think would be good were good. So it really, really is a difficult situation. And if we do have severe fires, the poor people who rebuilt may have to go through that whole cycle again.
And what's the labor situation for the Alberta oil patch? If they have to evacuate from there, does that mean they're short employees again?
Well, the industry's tight anyway because you've got an active rig season drilling, especially for heavy oil wells now that the TMX is open. The rig count in Canada has picked up nicely, which surprises people that, given how bad the rig count situation is in the USA. I'm just pulling out last Friday's run. And the U.S., is down 19% in rig count, 605 versus 748. In Canada, we're up 29%. 120 rigs versus 93. And in the mix, we have 60 rigs of those 120. Half of the rigs are drilling for liquids-rich natural gas, and half of them are drilling for oil. And that oil number compares to 34 a year ago, up 76%. And the big choice there, the big move there, is to drill up heavy oil wells to move into the TMX pipeline and to the coast. But you've heard all the crazy stories that there's not enough tugboats to move the boats. The type of ships that are there are smaller than the big ones that they need to move the crude. They're talking about fluid issues in the mix there. So, the TMX, going to, 890,000 BOEs a day or barrels a day is just not happening to the degree people thought. And there's a lot of berthing pains. But then again, any new project has them. But the fact that the shipping is a big issue, I think, is going to make it hard to, you'll be able to ship in smaller ships to the U.S., or you're going to be shipping in the smaller ships, and then they go offshore, and then they transport the oil and move the oil to larger ships to move to Asia. That just adds to the costs, and, the likelihood is a lot of our oil from Alberta is going to end up in California because the California restrictions are so tough, and they have refineries that need heavy oil. So, while we've heard of India taking a load and China taking a load, I think the majority of the loads are going to probably end up going to California.
Will someday the Trans Mountain Pipeline bring down gasoline prices in Vancouver, which are the highest in North America?
Have you won a lottery yet? You bought? Come on. Look, the taxes are a big difference. Transportation adds to it. The cost of real estate for gasoline stations is higher. If we're sitting at $1.52 in Calgary, I bet you're $1.90 right now.
Probably around $2.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, downtown Vancouver has no gasoline stations.
Yeah. Well, the real estate is obscene. You cannot. And then, of course, with what are gasoline stations going to do when they grow up? In the next 10, 20 years, are they going to put in, A&Ws or Tim Hortons next to them? Are they going to put in charging stations or fast charging stations so people can go in, get a gas, go get a coffee, or go get a charge up fast with a fast speed charger and then go away in their EV after getting the coffee? This whole issue of what's going to happen for the transportation system going forward, just as, for all the government's rhetoric, we want this, we want that, nobody seems to have thought about the implications of it and started planning it and working with industry to get there. It's just so stupid.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, did Canada miss the boat when the federal government refused requests from countries like Germany to improve our ability to get liquefied natural gas to them?
It was a non-starter. They want to sell them, hydrogen. How the hell do you make the hydrogen is an issue. So to me, Ottawa just, talks a good story, but there's no way we're going to meet any of the goals that they talk about or any of the promises that they're talking about. It sounds good politically. The left loves it. The environment minister loves to hear that stuff. But for the man in the street in Canada, it's a non-starter. Think about the cost of transporting hydrogen and making hydrogen, and then the economics are not going to work.
You might as well use that electricity directly, shouldn't you? It would be more efficient than to use electricity to make hydrogen.
Yeah, but where's the electricity going to come from?
Yeah.
Is it going to be cogen? Is it going to be more hydro? How much more of Labrador can Quebec Hydro dam up? You know, and how much more is Labrador and Newfoundland going to take of it? You know, and what are the First Nations going to say about all the damage that's being done? You know, they were talking for a long time that all of the new LNG projects on the West Coast were all going to be using electricity from hydro, and then the hydro people say, oops, we can't do it. We don't have it. We don't have the rivers. We don't have the facilities.
Well, some of that natural gas have to be used to generate the power to compress it to ship it overseas.
Yeah, but there's so much gas that could be available for cogen, there's no reason why the new projects can't be allowed to use it. Just think that if you displace with LNG 2, 3, 4 coal plants that are using dirty coal in China and India, isn't the planet better off? And yet, the federal government and BC government is thinking just about the carbon emissions coming from a project, not the fact that the total carbon impact for the climate of the planet is way, way better. And that's the numbskull thing about this whole situation, is that the idiots don't seem to want to look at it from a global perspective. They're just trying to play the local political game.
BC has a 200-year proven reserve of natural gas. When did natural gas become such a bad deal? I remember when they wanted everybody to convert their cars to natural gas.
Well, natural gas, you know, you've got buses that are using it now. You've got, propane vehicles and that. Electric vehicles, buses now you're seeing, electric trucks are becoming a product that may have some life for short distances, but the EVs, China's is got the lowest cost batteries. Tell me a plant that's being built in Ontario for Honda for batteries is going to be cheaper than those batteries being made in China and shipped to Canada, and yet you now have Biden this week saying, oh, I'm going to put a 100% tariff on China's EVs. Well, there are no EVs coming into the United States. That was just a political stunt. And the only way China gets EVs in is if they play the free trade game and build the factories with high percentage of North American parts so that they can be part of the free trade agreement between Mexico, United States, and Canada. And a lot of Chinese companies are looking at doing that, BYD and others, Geely, and then they're going to have a lot of their suppliers build plants in Mexico. Mexico and the border becomes the winner, and they export the product to the United States and maybe someday to Canada. And, their price point can be as low as $10,000. The high-end vehicles are even cheaper than what we're seeing from Tesla, and that's why Tesla's lowered the prices to compete against NIO and Geely and BYD and all the other companies that are in China. The lineup, of Tesla is they haven't refreshed their lineup at all. And so, people want to see the newest gadgets and want to see newer features. And, one of the companies in China, I think, has got a real good gig going. It's NIO, N-I-O, and what happens is you drive up to one of their facilities, you get out of the, you can stay in the car or get out of the car and have a coffee, and they'll take the battery out from underneath you, put in a new battery, and then you can just go and drive off. And so, you don't have to worry about charging them. And, in densely populated parts of China, that's going to be a good marketing game.
Sure, your service station actually will do some service.
Yeah. Yeah, and the key thing is, after how many years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, depending upon the quality of the battery, do you have to replace? And do you know what the cost of replacing that battery is? A lot of people don't realize it could be $10,000 to $20,000.
Now, petroleum itself, again, you have all these people protesting if it's coming out of the ground, it's evil, it's horrible. But we're still going to need rubber for tires, rubber for a million other uses, plastics and so on. Why do they want to kill petroleum, period?
Well, you're getting the elitists, on the coast and in the big cities saying that we can drive down the demand for fossil fuels and it's going to make the environment better. They're missing one big point. All of the things that go into electricity grids, copper, if it's going to be lithium, if it's going to be nickel, if it's going to be aluminum, are come out of third world countries, and the people there want to be paid well. They want to have the same quality of life as we do. They want transportation. They want education. They want more protein in their diet. And so the demand growth that we're going to see between now and the end of the decade is all going to come from those emerging countries, emerging world entities in South America and Asia and in Africa. And the demand in the OECD countries is forecast to decline as we bring on more EVs. But the point people have to keep in the mind is that the data centers and the electricity demand and the repair of the electricity grid is going to be so expensive that we probably won't be able to see the demand for fossil fuels, oil, gas, heating oil, decline between now and the end of the decade. The assumptions being made by the optimistic climate people just don't have any reality check to them.
Look how long it took us to wean off horses. Horses were still a big part of transportation for armies in the Second World War.
Oh, yeah. Well, and look what's going on in the Middle East. You're still seeing donkeys and horses being used actively. It's just a sorry event. And, if it's Iraq or if it's Afghanistan or if it's Syria or if it's Palestine, the Gaza portion. The West Bank is a different story. It's more industrialized, more jobs. It's interrelated with the economies nearby, Jordan and Israel on either side of them. So the people there have a better quality of life. But Egypt, you'll still see in rural Egypt use of animal transportation.
Joseph, we usually end the interview with some hard numbers. So what are some of the numbers we should be looking at in the petro area?
Well, number one, because we're seeing, the inventory is building, I wrote that up in the Eye on Energy, and people can go to the website and sign up for that free product of ours. We're seeing, we were down below $77 in WTI this week, just based on the fact that of the inventory builds before the summer driving season, which, hits, on the July long weekend, I think we could see below $75 for WTI. I also believe there's still a war premium of $5 to $8 out there because of the Rafah-Israel invasion there to go after the last of the Hamas brigades. If we do see at some point a ceasefire and the hostages released, question is how many of them are still alive. When the deal that they were talking about was for 33 hostages, and Hamas was saying, well, we can only give you some of them alive, the rest are dead. They don't have that many alive. So Israel's going to go berserk when they find out how many were killed, and that Hamas doesn't have the hostages because they've been exterminated by Hamas. And that is going to cause Israel even more angst and anguish, so it's troubled there. The other thing I keep in mind is what we saw this week with the MEM stocks, GameStop, AMC, all these stocks went berserk. That's the kind of thing you see at the end of a bull market where, nutty things happen and, the kids on their chat lines, Reddit, start driving stocks up. That's a very bad sign. Of course, remember we saw that with Peloton in 2020, 2021, and look where that is now. I think the general stock market is vulnerable here. It's had new highs day after day, euphoria everywhere. As I mentioned, the CPI data was a little muted, so people jumped all over that and said inflation's under control. Fed's going to cut interest rates in September. But they're ignoring the PPI number, which said the inflation rate is 6% and service inflation is 7%. And those are embedded, and those are getting worse. So, and then remember, there's a war economy in the United States, which means, you know, that's going to keep on going, which is inflationary. So I think the assumption that the market has of happy days are here again is something to be worried about. Some of your other interviews probably have even more dire warnings than I do. My biggest concern is the U.S. debt bomb and $2 trillion of financing that has to go through. And if there ever was bond vigilante rejection of the pricing and the yields, and they walk away, China and India, they are not. China and Japan are not there to buy U.S. Treasuries anymore. They've got their own problems, and they're selling Treasuries. We could see some kind of problem there. And if interest rates, for example, on the two-year get back over 5%, and I think we're 4.73 or something today, that to me would be disconcerting for the general stock market. So just a fair warning that there's too much euphoria out there. People may want to take some profits and be careful just in case we do see the FANGs, the MEMs, the M7s, have a slap in the face.
Yeah, so far we haven't seen the sell in May and go away syndrome or phenomena.
Well, as you see, we're only May 16th, so a lot can happen in the last 2 weeks of the month.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure as always, Jim. You take good care.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.